All right. By the time I was a senior in college, I had taken the biology and the chemistries and all that stuff, but apparently I needed one more science class to graduate, and so I picked physics. Now, I didn't know anything about physics. I'd never taken physics. I didn't take physics in high school. In fact, in high school, I was like, it was me and all of us dumb kids were in like the lower down, like classes, like the dumbed down versions of class. I was in, not in chemistry in high school, I was in ChemCom, which was chemistry in our community. And we learned more about like water and how to make popcorn and stuff like that, you know, the important things side of chemistry. So that's what I knew. And so I had to take this class. So I signed up for physics and I convinced this girl that I really liked at that time to take physics with me, which, by the way, that's just good strategy. Okay, all you guys listening out there. I mean, number one, you got your little study group going already. All right, get what I'm saying? And not only that, but you got somebody to help you with homework and all that kind of stuff, bounce ideas off of. It's good all the way around. And so after a bunch of convincing this girl, Kate finally agreed to take physics, and I was super excited. And so we started the class at the beginning of the semester, and after just a few weeks, we were comparing grades, all right, because that's kind of what you do with friends and stuff, like, what'd you get? Well, I got this. What'd you get wrong? All that type of thing. And then after a few weeks of that, just because this is just how I am, I'm a little competitive, and so then we start competing with grades, and we start making fun of who gets the lower on quizzes and tests and all that kind of stuff. Fast forward to the end of the semester, right? We're sitting in the final week, and I am sitting with a B in the class, all right? I'm good with a B. I'm all about a B. I'm a B type, you know, kind of guy. And I know some of you, there's some A people out there. You never had a B in your life, and that just like it's the worst thing that could possibly happen in your life. And it gives you anxiety just thinking about having a B on something. But for me, I was all about a B. I'm like, man, that's way better than I expected. I'm good with that. All right, that's better probably than what I deserve. So I'm good with the B. Kate, on the other hand, had a C. Yeah, can you believe that? You have to give her a hard time. I tried to help her through the class, but she wasn't getting it, I guess. I don't know. And so we walk into the final exam, and I'll be honest, for the final exams, I didn't study that much. It was the end of the year. I had better things to do. You know, weather's nice and all that stuff. And for me, I'm thinking, I'm like, I'll be all right. All right, it's all going to be good. I'm a B guy, remember? Like, I'm already B, and I'm not even trying that hard. I mean, I have a pretty good grasp on this whole physics stuff. I'm going to go in, and I'm going to do all right. I'll figure it out while I'm in the test. And so during the exam, I'm taking it. I'm feeling pretty good. All right, I'm like, man, I'm doing better than I thought. Like, this is a little easier than I thought. Like, I felt like I aced it. Have you ever done that? Remember how it was back in high school or whenever you ever take a test, and you're just feeling it? You know, you're just like, oh, it feels so good. You're like, oh, I know these answers. You know, that doesn't happen all the time. And so that's kind of how I felt. I was confident. Walking out of the exam, I'm walking out with Kate. I remember being like, hey, who nailed this? This guy, I nailed that test, all right? That wasn't that hard. And she's telling me how hard it was and how she didn't get a good grade and all this stuff that she's doing. And so I'm feeling pretty confident about myself. Well, weeks later, all right, Kate, we get our grades back for the entire class. Class is over. And Kate's grade comes out to, her grade went from a C to a B. All right, good for Kate. That's good. All right, she must have done pretty good on that exam. But my grade, it drops from a B to a C. And I still have questions about that because I didn't get to see my exam. I want to see what I got wrong. And I don't know if he got my exam switched with somebody else or I don't know what happened on that. Still bothers me to this day. But going into that final exam, I felt great. Like, I felt confident, all right? I knew I wasn't the best student. I knew I wasn't the smartest person in the room. But I'll be honest, I felt pretty good. But it's not your grade's not based on how you feel the exam went, right? We all know that. It's based on reality. Now, many of us, we treat our eternity kind of like a final exam that we don't really feel like preparing for. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, you know, we don't know how it's going to go exactly, but we feel pretty confident in ourselves. We're like, well, you know, I might not be the best, but I'm doing pretty good, and I'll just kind of figure it out when I get there. And that's just, I'm just saying, that's probably not the best strategy going into your final final exam, let's say, because your eternity is at stake. So the last couple weeks, we have been looking at some common beliefs that many of us have that simply are not true. And not only are they not true, but it's really not good for us to believe and buy into. And one of the most common beliefs that I think a lot of us, we struggle with, is we have this idea that all people go to a better place when they die. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So today we're going to be talking about heaven. We're going to be talking about hell. And so, yes, I know some of you guys, you woke up early, you set the alarm, you're here, you got dressed, all that stuff, and you came for Hell Sunday, okay? We're going to be talking about that a little bit. But it's good, and we'll walk through this together. Because I don't know about you, but as a pastor, I have sat through funeral after funeral after funeral that as we're sitting there, you know, it's always the same thing. The person who has died has always gone to heaven. I mean, always. Like, every funeral, everybody assumes that everybody is in heaven. I've never sat there sitting on the front row as people go up and speak and talk about their times and memories and all that stuff. I've never heard anybody walk up and say, "Hey, man, I think we can all agree, Larry is definitely in hell." You know? Like, I've never heard that. No one does that. And there's kind of some unwritten rules, maybe, and a lot of it is kind of our cultural norm. Of it is that we ignore the reality of the type of life that we have after death. And so we say things like, "Heaven just gained an angel." Or "Hey, they're watching over us. I saw a bird and that that was their favorite bird. And so I know that they're here," and just all kind of all this stuff. We read into a lot of things. Or we say things like, "He is in a better place," or "She's in a better place." And we hear stuff like this all the time. And I'll be honest, I mean, I understand it makes us feel good. Right? It gives us comfort, especially at a time of loss where a lot of us, we're struggling. But the honest question that everyone in this room should be asking is it true? Is it true? Now, we all know from the Bible, right? Or we know from the Bible, that heaven and hell are real. I mean, we see it all over the place. You see that in the Old Testament. I believe every New Testament author references either heaven or hell. We look at Jesus' life and his ministry. I mean, Jesus, he talked about heaven and hell a lot. In fact, Jesus talked a lot more about hell than he did about heaven. And if you read your Bibles, which I hope you do, you should be, what we see is that heaven is described as like a place of life. There's no crying. There's no pain, which is awesome. We're in God's glory, and it's just like we're in awe of God, which is got to be a great place to be. On the flip side of that, we got hell, which is a place is described as a place of death, but you don't actually die. It's described as a place of a lake of fire, as a place of torment, and it's never ending. And so for us, when we think about heaven, we all love this. We embrace the idea of heaven. Yeah, there's going to be a better place. Can't wait. You know, it's going to be so great. But for a lot of us, you know, the whole idea of hell, it kind of makes us squirm a little. You know, we're just like, I'm just not very comfortable with that. In fact, a lot of us, you know, we grew up with the word hell as almost like a swear word. You know, it's like something we weren't allowed to say or to talk about. It's like, "Oh, you can't say that." Even remember, like in elementary school, you get out your calculators and you type in 7734. You turn it upside down. You're like, "Hell, you know, look at this." It's like, there's also some other words that we shouldn't be doing, you know, in those too. But you know, it's like this thing that we did, this idea that it was like, "Man, we can't talk about this. We can't even say the word." We all love the image of heaven, and we are not a fan of hell. But God says that both exist, and both are very real. In fact, one time, Jesus is traveling to Jerusalem, where he's actually going to be killed. And he is taking his time. Now, how many of you guys like traveling? All right, we like traveling, get in the car, and you just kind of go. We all have our different styles and different ways that we do things. I know a lot of you, you're kind of on one extreme where when you're traveling, some of you, it's all like tunnel vision. Like, you're like, "I'm just trying to get to my destination. I want to get there as fast as possible. I want to be in the car as least amount of time as possible." You even got like, things timed out and like schedules, and you're trying to break records and just all this stuff. Some of you guys are like that. Everything's time. If you stop, it's a one stop. Like you're doing everything. You got gas, bathroom, food. Like, it's all happening in that one stop. And you're kind of cracking the whip on anybody who's around you and traveling with you. I've been this way. Kate hated it. And so I've kind of eased off that a little bit in my older age. But you're just kind of like, "I ain't stopping for nothing." You just go. It's the most efficient way to go, by the way. So that's good. But that is not how Jesus is traveling. That is not the way that Jesus is traveling. Jesus, he is stopping in all the little towns and all the little villages as he's making his last walk all the way to Jerusalem. He's not in any hurry. Jesus is taking his time, which, by the way, in my older age, as I grow and get older or whatever, I guess I'm done growing, unfortunately, but you get what I'm saying. Well, the good way. But now it's funny because now I purposely choose the slow way a lot of times, which kind of drives Kate nuts a little bit, where we'll be driving down the road and she'll be taking a nap. I'll get off at the exit, you know, I'm going, and she'll wake up, and instead of the interstate, we're on like a 2-lane road going through towns, and she's like, what is going on? Are we going the slow way again? I'm like, no, we're going the scenic way. You know, we're going to see, yeah, whatever, we're going to see stuff, which, by the way, is I'm just doing it like Jesus did, so it's just true. But as Jesus is slowly making his way to Jerusalem, he's got a bunch of followers following behind him. And someone along the way raises their hand and they have a question. They ask this. They said, Lord, Jesus, sir, quick question here. Are only a few people going to be saved? They're saying, so, Jesus, let's talk about heaven for a second. Is there only going to be a few of us in heaven? And maybe for them, they're kind of looking around. They're like, you know, there's maybe like 50 people or so around as they're following Jesus. You know, as this person might be like, hey, is this it? Is this it? Like, is it just our crew? And the main focus of the question is how many? Is it a lot? Is it a little? Is it just us? What would the population of heaven look like? Like, how many people are going to be there? Like, could you just give us some insight, Jesus, into what heaven's going to look like? And Jesus looks at the guy. And he said to them, meaning he looks at the guy, and then he kind of looks to the entire crowd of people that's following and that's kind of around them. They all hear this question being asked, and he looks at everybody, and he says to everybody, all right, so if he was here, he would say this to all of us here today. He'd say, well, I want you to make every effort to enter through the narrow door. Now, Jesus, if you notice, he didn't answer the question. I mean, Jesus doesn't say, oh, man, you know, you're right, there's not going to be many, or, oh, man, there's going to be tons of people. He doesn't say anything about how many are going to be there, like the guy is asking. What Jesus says, hey, don't worry about how few, you worry about you. That's what's important. He says, make every effort, meaning do whatever you have to do to be one that makes it to heaven. He's like, you want to know what heaven's like? Picture it as like, and they're like, streets of gold, like, it's good, perfect weather, like, all, what's it going to be like? He's like, picture it as like a narrow, tiny, skinny, scrawny door. That's what heaven's like. I remember growing up, I had a friend who lived in like an old farmhouse, and I remember one day, we're in his room doing, you know, playing or whatever, and he's like, let me show you something in my closet, and I'm like, Nah, I'm good. Like, I don't know what's going on in there. And he's like, no, let me show you something. And we go into his closet. He's got kind of a bigger closet. And he pushes the clothes, like, along the racks. And all of a sudden, there appears this, like, small little door. And the door's about this tall. And so there's this little small door there. And he opens it up. And sure enough, you could crawl in this door. And there's, like, an entire other room on the other side. Like, that's like how you get in. It had like a window and everything outside. Like, I'm like, dude, this is awesome. As a kid, it was sweet because it was like, you got a secret room in your room, right? That's like every kid's dream with a tiny like door. You got to crawl through all this stuff. And I remember like thinking, I'm like, I would never have known that that was there unless he had showed me. See, a narrow door is hard to see. And what Jesus's point is going to be is that many people are going to miss it. See, I think one of the reasons we just don't like this idea of a narrow door, especially in our culture. Like for us, what we naturally think is we're just like, why so narrow? Like it's kind of offensive. Seems kind of narrow-minded. You know, it just doesn't seem that fair. What about the other people? And we naturally think this way because we are raised in a culture that is extremely open-minded. Now, let me just kind of clear something up. Being open-minded is not always a bad thing. We all understand this. There's a lot of times where we need to be more open-minded in our life, and it can be a good thing. But we shouldn't be open-minded in everything. And that's kind of what our culture pushes us to. See, we live in a time of endless choices. We can be open-minded about many different things. So if you want to go get your groceries, that's cool. You can go to Walmart. If you don't like Walmart, you could go to Aldi. If you don't like Aldi, you could go to Kroger. If you don't like Kroger, you go to IGA or Bassett's or whatever it's called now, you know, on the east side. You could go there. That's cool. You got an open mind. You could go wherever you want. If you want ice cream, that's even better. You could go to Little Hugo's. Now, if you're not a Little Hugo, I know people have their camps here in Tiffin. People get serious about their ice cream, right? If you don't like Little Hugo's, you can go to Frozone. If you don't want Frozone right now, you go to Big Dipper. If you don't want the Big Dipper, you got Shake Shack somewhere down the road. You know, you got all these places that you could go to. You got options, man, all right? You could be open-minded about your ice cream. That's cool. All right, a couple weeks ago, I was doing some painting in my house, and my paintbrush has been through a lot, and I'm like, yeah, it's probably about time that I get a different brush. And so I went to Lowe's, and I'm looking at the paintbrushes there, and I'm like, first of all, I'm like, when did paintbrushes cost like 18 bucks? Like, what happened there? What's going on here? Like, someone's making a killing on paintbrushes and going to that business. And so I left Walmart, I was like, or Lowe's. I'm like, I'm just going across the street. I went to Rural King, still kind of expensive there. And so I was thinking I was going to buy one there, and I'm like, oh, I know. I'll go to Harbor Freight. They got the cheap stuff there. And I could just get a cheap, you know, I'm not good at washing out my brushes anyway, so a lot of times it's like one time, you know, one time use. And so I'm like, I leave Rural King, I go to Harbor Freight, and while I'm at Harbor Freight, I'm getting ready to buy some other paintbrushes when I have this thing. I'm like, oh, wait, there's that Ollie's place like right down the sidewalk. I don't know if you guys been there before. I'm not quite sure what's going on there. It's different. It's different. I'm like, I walked in there. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I found some paintbrushes. Then they're asking me to be part of their army. And I don't know what's going on. But it was cheap. And they get all their stuff from China, I'm sure. But that's good. That's fine. I'll take the cheap price. And so I went and I got a paintbrush there for like $3. So I'm just saying, if you're looking for some subpar paintbrushes, that's the place where you want to go. Cheap. But we got options, man. We can be open-minded in our culture, and our culture likes that. Our culture likes a freedom of choice. But we as Christians, when it comes to how to get to heaven or where we're going to end up when we die, we don't really have a big choice here. We don't have a bunch of options. Right? If you don't like Jesus, it's like tough. He is the only way. By the way, being narrow-minded is not always a bad thing. Right? There's some examples like most of us, I don't know about you, I'm assuming every single one of us, we're in the same boat. Like, we're not looking for, like, an open-minded pilot when we fly. You know what I'm saying? Right? Like, they're going into land, they call the, you know, they radio the tower, and the tower's like, hey, all right, we're going to need you to kind of hold off for about 10 minutes, and we'll get you in, but we got a long way, it's super busy, and so, so kind of wait your turn. You don't want a pilot going, well, that sounds great, tower, but I'm feeling a little open-minded, so we're just going to go now. Whatever happens, happens, we'll figure it out. That's not what we're looking for. All right, well, if we go in for surgery and you get surgery done on like a tendon or something like that. After the surgery, you don't want to be meeting with the doctor and hear the doctor say something like, you're like, how'd it go, doc? And they're like, well, you know, I fixed your tendon, but I was also feeling a little open-minded. And so I went in and started poking around your heart too, and I think I dropped a Tic Tac somewhere in there, but I don't know, it'll be all right. Like no one's looking for that. We want our doctor to be closed-minded when it comes to fixing the one thing we need fixed. See, meaning being narrow-minded is a good thing for us. And we shouldn't be offended at this whole idea that Jesus is presenting of a narrow door. In fact, we should be unbelievably thankful that he even made a door. And so he turns to this crowd of people. He says, man, heaven's more like a narrow door, and many, he says, will try to enter that narrow door, and they won't be able to. He says, and once the homeowner, in this case, this is God, in fact, it's Jesus himself, he says, once the homeowner gets up and shuts that door, man, it's like shut. So the whole crowd, as people are listening to this, I'm sure they're all kind of thinking the same thing, like, wait, what do you say, Jesus? What do you mean? The door's closing? All right, when's that door closed, by the way? I would like to know that. All right, what's going on? Why would he ever shut the door? And Jesus is like, yeah, the door's not going to remain open forever. Like right now, we kind of got this open enrollment type thing. All right, but it's going to close someday, and it will not reopen. See, that doors will be closed on these people, but these people aren't just going to give up trying to get in. He says, so there's going to be a bunch of people, they're going to be left out, and they're not going to be happy about it. And then you, he uses the word you, and so things are getting pretty personal right now. So up until this point, it's there's going to be these people and those people and them and they and all these people. But now he's like, he's getting personal. He's saying, and you, some of you. So if Jesus was standing up here on this stage today, I'm sure he would say the same thing. Some of you will stand on the outside and knock on that door. It's a sad reality that some of us will be dead and still confident that we are getting into heaven. But when we die, it's final. That's it. He says, and these people that will stand on the outside and they will knock on that door and they will say, Lord, 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 hey, Jesus, Jesus, we, you know us, open up. All right, please open up the door for us. And he's gonna answer you. He says, I don't know you or where you're from. See, these people will claim to have a relationship with the owner, but in reality, they don't have a relationship with the owner. These people will claim to have a relationship with God, but they truly don't have a relationship with God. And the owner looks at them as strangers, and he's like, man, I don't even know you. But they don't give up. They push back. They'll say, no, you do know us. All right, you know me. All right, we ate and drank in your presence, and you taught us in our streets. Right, like we were there, like, I know your words, I've studied your stuff, I listen to your stuff, like, I know the kind of things that you say. See, the problem with these people is that these people are familiar with Jesus, but they don't know Jesus. I mean, they know of him, they know some things about him, man, but these people don't know him. And this is the majority of church attenders in our community here today. This is the majority of church attenders in our county. See, people like us church people and churches today, what we're all worried about is worried about like the atheists and the liberal politicians and all these people who are kind of pushing things that aren't good. And here I am on stage. I'm like, I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about you. Jesus is saying, just because you follow, I mean, just because you're like, they were physically following him, that does, and you like the idea of me, that doesn't mean that you are in. Yeah, I talk to people all the time that know a little bit about Jesus, and they like the idea of Jesus. He's Savior, and he's forgiving, and he's all loving, and he'll accept me for the way that I am, and it is all true things technically, and they believe that Jesus existed and that he was real and was just a good guy. But when you dig down deep, there's no relationship there, and they don't know him. They never truly have invited Jesus to be a part of their life. They are still doing life on their own. It's almost like people are trying to get into heaven and to get into this home in Jesus' story, and we think that being familiar with Jesus is good enough. And Jesus comes on the scene on this day, and he says, yeah, it's not. That's what religion is. That's religious stuff. Be familiar with Jesus and do all the Jesus-type stuff, but don't actually surrender your life to him. And so God, the homeowner, replies, and again, the saddest thing is that there's a good chance there's some people in this room who are there on that day, and for the first time in your life, there will be honesty between you and Jesus. And he will say, I tell you, I don't know you or where you're from. Get away from me, all of you evildoers. And there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth in that place. Doesn't that freak you out? I'm just saying, man, that scares me. I don't know about you. I'm just saying the God of the universe is saying on this day, he's saying, heaven is real. Hell is real. And many people will try to get to heaven, but will be turned away. And many will think they are in because they are familiar with Jesus, but that relationship actually doesn't exist. That should scare you. It should. It scares me. Not just scares me for you. It scares me for me. I sure sound a lot like the way these people describe themselves. See, a bunch of people think they're going to heaven, but to their surprise, they will be in hell forever. And so here's this guy. He's saying, is it just us? Like, is it just us? Just kind of our group here? Is that who's going to make it into heaven? And Jesus' point is, he's saying, no, you don't understand. Some of you aren't even in. Jesus is saying, you're asking the wrong question. You're asking how many? The question is, are you? It's similar to what Jesus says in Matthew 7. We've talked about this before. He says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord. Meaning, not everyone who has an emotional connection to me. Not everyone who believes like that I existed. Not everybody who respects me will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. Meaning, only the one who surrenders their life to me, who begins that relationship with me. Only the one who puts 100% of their trust in me. And then he says, and on that day, what day? This is like judgment day. This is a day, by the way, can we just make this real for a second? I was just thinking about this. This is a day that every single one of us will be there for. Hasn't happened yet. It's in our future. This day that he's talking about, you will be there for this. I will be there for this. On that day, we all have a scheduled appointment. We don't know when it is. We all have it's written in stone. We all have an appointment to be there on that day, and we will all be there on that day. He says, on that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name? We drove out demons in your name. Didn't we do a bunch of miracles in your name? God, didn't we do all this stuff? Didn't you see all the stuff that we did? All right, we've done all this for you. They're pointing at their stuff. By the way, I'm just saying, I've never done any of these things. I mean, these people are way better, like religious people than I am. You know, I've never prophesied. I've never driven out any demons. That'd be sweet, though. I've never done any of that. All right, I've never done any miracles in Jesus' name. I've never done any of that. These people are like way better than me. I mean, you'd think, like, if the demon exorcist committee at the church, like, they would be in heaven, you know what I mean? And they actually succeeded at that stuff. But these people are pointing at their things, and Jesus has already said, no, you're not in. And they're like, whoa, look at all our stuff. Look at our resume. He says, then I will have to announce to them, man, I never knew you. You gotta leave. He says, depart from me. See, these people, they believe in God, they're cool with God, they recognize Jesus as God, I mean, they're calling him Lord. They believe that he exists, they do a bunch of good stuff. I mean, these people are really, really good people. I mean, they're good church people. They have some impressive resumes, and Jesus looks at them and he's like, man, I don't even know you. You never decided to have a relationship with me. I mean, Jesus would say, I wanted that relationship with you. I went out of my way so that you could have that relationship with me. Like, I desperately wanted that, but throughout your life, you chose not to have that with me, and these people are completely caught off guard. And they have all their stuff. Well, I went to church every week, and I went on missions trips, and I gave to the church, and I served the church, and I was a really, really nice person. In fact, I tried to love everybody. Like, I did my best, and I was baptized, and I prayed a lot, and I read my Bible every day, and I underlined a bunch of verses. Like, you should see how many verses I've highlighted in my Bible, God, and I listened to your teaching all the time, and I tried to do my best, and I was an above-average religious person. Jesus, check out my resume. Like, check this out. Like, look at it. I know so much about you, but the problem is, it's not about knowing about God. It's only about knowing God. And so my question for you today is, how confident are you that you know him? I'm talking like know him. Like know him as I have a deep personal relationship with him. See, having a good resume, that doesn't get you into heaven. It's having a relationship with him. See, that's what we do. With our resume thing, a lot of us, we think this way. I'm a good person, so my good outweighs my bad, so I'm pretty good. What we tend to do is we tend to add Jesus to our resume. We have all this good stuff, and at the bottom it's like, oh yeah, and Jesus. I put my trust in Jesus and my baptism and my communion and church attendance, and I'm a really good person and all this stuff. And we've just gone through a whole bunch of this. In fact, the whole book of Galatians, which we just finished a couple weeks ago, is all about this. It's not Jesus and, it's only Jesus. It's not Jesus and our good stuff. It's just Jesus and what he did. See, the only way we get to heaven is by making a conscious decision to invite Jesus into our life. I think for me, I think the best word maybe to describe this is the word surrender. We like surrender to him in the fact that we're like, I'm not putting my trust in anything I do because I'm not good enough. I'm putting all my trust in you. It's almost like we surrender control to get there, to him. That's when our relationship with God starts. It just doesn't happen. It's a decision that each and every one of us need to make in our life. And by the way, I'll just throw this out there. I'm not saying if you don't remember making that decision that you're for sure like going to hell or anything like that. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that should be a red flag. That should make you think. Most important decision in your entire life that your eternity hangs in the balance. It's probably a decision that you would remember making. And if you don't, I'm just saying you really should question yourself. I don't know anything for sure. And those that refuse to make that decision, the many, as Jesus would call them, people who kind of walk into the test is like I did on my exam, where it's like, I'm good, I'll figure it out. I mean, I might not be the smartest, might not be the best, but I'm pretty good, like I'm pretty up there, you know? People who just kind of put it off. Man, Jesus makes it clear that those people go to a place called hell, and it's real. It's a place we were never meant to go. Technically, it was a place for Satan. God never meant for us to go there. God doesn't send us to hell. When someone goes to hell, they go by their own choice. And God has done everything he can in his power to keep us out of that place. He's gone to some pretty extreme measures to keep us out of hell. I mean, it's kind of crazy. You know what he did one time? One time, he took off his glory, and he came down, and he became one of us, and he even died to keep us out of that place. See, it's hard for some of us because we're like, whoa, but how could a loving God send someone to hell? No, the better question is, how could a perfectly just God send people to heaven? How is he able to pull that off? And the answer is because he paid our price. See, here's the deal. This is what we call the gospel, by the way, which is just good news. The good news is that God is perfectly just. Right? Meaning sin must be paid for. The problem with that, specifically for us, is that every single one of us, we are all messed up, jacked up, horrible, terrible sinners. We are. And so Jesus came to pay for all the wrong that we've ever done. And he was the only one who could do it because he was the only perfect one. And so he came and he paid for it. And so our sin that we commit, that we don't take really all that serious, is so serious to God that it has to be paid for. And it's either paid on the cross by Jesus himself, and he gives us this free gift that he paid for it when we surrender our lives to him, or it is paid throughout eternity in hell, and we pay for it. Either way, our sin will be paid for. And I think many of us, not many, I think some of us, few of us, I think we get that. Like, we know that intellectually, and we've heard about hell, learned about hell, we believe in hell, all that stuff. But what we say and how we live does not match up with what we know and what we believe. And that's messed up. For me, in my life, one of the people I cared about most is my granddad. He was not a Christian, and he died several years ago. Now, I know he heard the gospel, and of course I live with stuff that you guys live with. I'm regret of I should have done more, I should have pushed him more, I should have talked to him about it more, all that kind of stuff. So for me, sitting here today, because I think about this sometimes with him, do I have hope that at some point, as he laid as an old man on his deathbed in the hospital, that maybe he would have given his life to Jesus? 100% I have hope. Can I honestly say that he is in heaven? No, because he's probably not. And I'm not going to lie to myself to make me feel better about a situation that I know just probably isn't true. I don't know for sure I got hope. I'm good with the hope. See, I don't want to go around saying, oh, I just, you know, I know heaven gained an angel, or they're watching over us, or he or she's in a better place, or they're no longer a pain, or anything like that. About people, we should not do that about people who we're confident didn't surrender to Jesus. I'm just saying, I don't think that's helping anybody. Because you know what everybody's thinking? Who don't know Jesus? They're thinking, well, you know, if Larry is going to heaven, then I'm a better person than Larry, and so I'm good, you know? And you who knows the truth are just helping promote this lie that all people go to a better place when they die. It's an issue. This is why the most important thing in our life, by the way, is to push others to make the decision about Jesus. That's why it's so important that we do that. Telling others about what Jesus has done for them. And by the way, as pastors, this is not a pastor's job to do that. In fact, biblically, I feel like I could argue with a pretty good argument that once I became a pastor, my job stopped reaching out to others, and my job is to focus on you for you guys to go out and reach out to others. All right? That's the way the New Testament operates. That's the way the church is supposed to be set up. And so really, that is your job to do that, meaning every morning that you wake up, the question should be, who am I helping find Jesus today? What am I doing? What strategies am I doing? How am I living to help people find Jesus? Because it's that important. And we as a church staff, we as a pastoral staff, what we do is we are to come alongside of you to help you reach your family, your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors, and your community. So everything we do around here is geared towards helping you accomplish your God-given mission of reaching the people that are in your world that God has specifically placed in your life. That's why we do everything, you know, the way we do. I mean, that's why we do the music the way we do. That's why we, you know, have coffee and tea. I don't drink that stuff. All right, some of you guys like that. I'm not a fan. Okay, I don't do that it's not for me. It's not technically for you, although you're free to have it. All right, that's for the person who doesn't know Jesus can come in and hopefully feel comfortable so that they will hear the good news of Jesus. That's why we're asking 200 to 300 first and second service people to do church at a theater for a year and a half. You know, so we can make space. That's why we're building more space right outside this back wall in a year or so. You know, so we can start working on that so we can make more space to help you help others. That's the reason. See, Jesus didn't teach us the truth about heaven and hell for us just to ignore because it makes us uncomfortable. No, he gave it to us for two reasons. Number one, for you to check you. For you to look at you. He's warning you. He's warning us. He's warning me. But it also gives us a sense of urgency that the people around us, all around us, are dying and going to hell. And that should not sit with the Christian. That should bother us. And it should motivate us and give us a sense of urgency to do something about it. A lot of times with the people that we care about the most. It's our job. It's our mission. It's our purpose in life. It's the last words that Jesus gave. He says, I want you guys to go out and tell people. And the only reason why we have the ability or the opportunity to give our life to Jesus and go to heaven is because somebody else before us wouldn't shout up about it. Now it's our turn. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words. I mean, talking about heaven, easy. Talking about hell, we don't like that much. But Lord, you've taught on these things. And in fact, Jesus spoke more about hell than he did about heaven. And you did this for a reason. God, help us to examine our hearts today and make sure that we are 100% sure that we have given our life over to you, that we put 100% of our trust, not in the good stuff we do, but in what you did. And God, help us to use this to motivate us to reach the people around us that you have specifically placed in our little worlds and in our lives, that we'd help reach them and point them to you. God, we need your help on this. And we thank you for making a door for us so we could spend eternity with you. What an awesome day that will be. Lord, we thank you for this. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.